Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Full page of important new articles on the website this morning. Absolutely visit it and see. Read them. Today, my guest, we have a full week of live programming for you this week. We often have archive repeats. This week, it'll be five live programs. Today, my guest is Catherine Hughes. Catherine has been on before, and I like to say that she represents the best of citizen activism. In 2004 and 5, she was an ACLU court watcher. She sat through the entire 17-week trial, call it a kangaroo trial, of Dr. Rafael Dafir. He was convicted on 59 of 60 counts and sentenced to 22 years in federal prison for what? For what Catherine accurately called his crime of compassion. He used his own money and what he could raise through his Help the Needy charity to provide essential to life aid to Iraqis during the punitive sanctions period, the sanctions that should have been declared illegal and never put on in the first place, but they lasted just days after August 1990, just days after Saddam went into Kuwait, until the war began in 2003. All of that period, he got two UN humanitarian coordinators to resign, and Dennis Halliday on this program said, and I've quoted him before, he resigned because he was asked to commit something the equivalent of genocide, which is exactly what it was. Compassionate men like Rafael Dafir wanted to help, and as a result, he's serving a 22-year sentence in federal prison in this country. So the topic today is political prisoners. Rafael and other Muslims are in a special unit set up at the federal prison in Terre Haute, Indiana, a CMU, a communications management unit, to isolate Muslim inmates from others illegally. U.S. law, prison regulations, Supreme Court decision bans the practice. Oh, I'll read you what the Supreme Court said, at least a couple of lines from it, in a decision, 2005 decision they made. But the practice is illegal, but they do it anyway. To be a little bit tougher on Muslims than the other inmates, make no mistake about it, anybody who ends up in a prison, state or federal, you're going into a very harsh environment. They want to make it a little meaner against Muslim prisoners. We'll talk about it, including recent deterioration of conditions at the CMU. Catherine, welcome to the program. What a long introduction.
Well, thanks very much. I think you gave the listeners a very good overview of the case and what's happening to the Muslim community.
Oh, indeed, Catherine. And we've talked about it on this program and my other one in the past. And you speak out publicly on this. It's important to know. I like to say to people, Catherine, that under the conditions that we're living through right now, and it simply doesn't matter that we have a new president, I see no difference. It's only been less than 60 days, but I see absolutely no difference. Continuity from Bush to Obama. And I like to say that today, it may be Muslim people. Tomorrow, it could be all of us.
You're absolutely right, and that's been one of my biggest motivations since I started working on this case.
Catherine, I think you remember that music. It means we need to break away briefly, but we'll come right back and we'll...
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm on with Catherine Hughes. We're talking about political prisoners, Rafael Dafir, prison conditions at the CMU, Terre Haute Federal Prison. Catherine, on Thursday, you may have seen the week's schedule. I'll have on the wife of one of the so-called Fort Dix Five, more innocent Muslim men who did absolutely nothing, yet they were convicted in another kangaroo proceeding. They haven't been sentenced yet. They will be later in April, around a month from now. But they did absolutely nothing. I use language in the I wrote about them, and that's how the wife of one of the Fort Dix Five knew about me, and she emailed me to thank me. I wrote in the article that there was no plot, there was no crime, and yet these people, five of them, young men, were convicted of plotting to wage war on the U.S. Army. The very notion is ludicrous, but yet the jury gets scared. The prosecution is very clever. They're very good, and they scare juries to convict. So innocent Muslim men, sometimes women, are used for political advantage. But the rest of us, if anybody challenges the system, we could be targets. They can come get us, and they can get us in lots of different ways. So it's something to be very concerned about. But, Catherine, let's say you're in regular communication with Rafael, and you're aware of what's been going on since he was brought there, since before he was brought there. Discuss a little bit about the situation as you know it.
Let me just quickly tell the listeners about Dr. Bashir, because he's a kind of classic case of what the government is doing to Muslim people across the country. He's an oncologist. He was a pillar of the community, the Muslim community, founder of the mosque, and he was arrested in a really high-profile operation and then held without bail. And although the government never brought any charges of terrorism, the Attorney General John Ashcroft and Governor Pataki said that he had ties to terrorism. And the government was always going for a terrorism prosecution. And we know this because there was a paper written in 2003, and just shortly after Bashir was arrested, that mentioned him as financing terrorism. And then after the white-collar crime trial, when the government got their verdict and Bashir was sentenced, the author of that paper and the three Bashir prosecutors gave a lecture on Bashir's case and helped the media in terrorist financing. So it's very clear that the government from the beginning was going after him as a terrorist, but he's never been allowed to defend himself of that charge. And this is just one of the techniques that the government uses. Another one of the techniques that they use is in the Fort Dix case, is where they send in an FBI informant who really sets people up. There isn't any plan. All the planning is coming from the government. And what's really frightening is that the American people think the government is keeping us safe, and they're spending millions on, getting convictions in these cases. I can't remember if it was the Fort Dix case or another case where this was actually the third trial, because what the government does in these cases, if they don't get a conviction the first time, then they bring the trial again. And in some cases, they bring it a third time. And I think it was Jonathan Turley that was saying, this isn't the illegal system. This is playing the laws of averages, that if you keep bringing a case, you're eventually going to get a conviction.
Oh, indeed, Catherine. There's a case against, I think, mostly non-Muslim men in this case, some poor black men down in the Miami, Florida area, and they were charged and brought to trial on a plot to blow up an FBI building in the South Florida area and also the Sears Tower in Chicago. This time the jury didn't buy it, and they exonerated them, and they were retried, and the jury exonerated them again. I mean, they didn't do anything. Again, there was I think was an FBI informant. It's a typical plot. Somebody gets in, and they will secretly tape conversations. Sometimes secretly videotape goings on, and they can produce hundreds of hours of this stuff, and somehow try to piece together improperly. Comments to misconstrue what in fact went on, what was said, what was meant, to build a case, and then selectively present that to a jury, play it back, or get the informant to come in and make statements that are absolutely untrue. And they're well paid for it, Catherine. They pay these informants, who are usually low-life type people, who may have charges pending against them, but the FBI, the Department of Justice, will whitewash them. They'll either go easy on them, or they'll simply forget about them entirely to have them cooperate to get the people that they're trying to convict and pay them money. The plot can go on for many, many months. So they go on the government payroll, and they can earn money that can exceed $100,000. It is absolutely incredible to railroad innocent people for something that they never did or never planned to do. Now the government, these people in Miami, it looks like the government will retry them again. So in other words, they just keep doing this over and over again until they get what they want. And if they don't get what they want, at the very least, they make the lives of these people absolutely miserable, and they'll bankrupt them. They'll make them use all their own resources.
They destroy their lives, and that also sends a message. Even if they don't get a conviction, they destroy these people's lives. They destroy their reputation. And, you know, that's what I would say to your listeners. This is our civic duty, to go and sit in on these trials, because often the newspapers are complicit with the government, and we as citizens have to go and witness this trial. I mean, I was just appalled sitting through the trial every day and then seeing what was written in the paper the next day, with completely uncritical coverage. And, you know, even though the jurors weren't supposed to read the paper, really did a hatchet job on Dr. Dacia. And unfortunately, because the government didn't bring terrorism charges, it was only the local paper who covered the case. That was the only media in the court, and the prosecutors couldn't have written the articles better themselves. And people, there was about 12 court watchers like me, and many of us were present for more of the trial than the local reporter, but we couldn't get letters published in the paper. And whenever we were presented, which was very rarely, we were always made to be Dacia's supporters. And I didn't know Dr. Dacia before I went to this trial. And my concern for what's happening comes from more than 30 years ago. I saw a documentary of the Allies going into Bergen-Belsen. I was 14 at the time, and I couldn't understand how something like that could happen. And so for 30 years, I have read more than 100 books, maybe 200 first-hand accounts, trying to understand what happened in Germany at that time. And I didn't understand it really until I was attending Dr. Duffy's trial and I was trying to tell people about what was happening and what was happening to Muslims. Because what I realised when I started looking into Dr. Duffy's case is that his charity wasn't the only charity that was being the government was going after. In the aftermath of 9/11, one of the major targets of the US government was Muslim charity. And so, like, six of the biggest charities were shut down and many, many others. So you have a Dr. Dafir in almost every city in this country where the message to the Muslim community is we can knock down pillars of your community and non-Muslims in your community are not even going to stand up and ask for equal rights.
Oh, indeed.
And that's
yes.
What we have to do.
We need to take another break. It's a very, very disturbing story. It's the reason I go back to it all the time. We'll be right back.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. I'm on with Catherine Hughes. We're talking about political prisoners. Catherine, I've written about a good many of them. You've seen the articles that I've written. Last December, I wrote about the biggest Muslim charity in the U.S., the Holy Land Foundation charity. They provide help for the needy in various countries, including right here in America. And I mentioned that their activities, I mean, they were accused and convicted of conspiracy with terrorism and all the rest. And again, glorious human beings, falsely charged, convicted, and sentenced, and so on. The same ugly story, but their activities included providing financial aid to needy and impoverished families, a scholarship program for orphan children, all sorts of social services, educational services, medical and other emergency relief, community development, and in their own defense, on their website, I'm sorry, I don't even think it was in their defense. Well, maybe it was, but they wrote on their website, the words were so beautiful that I quoted them, and that this is a quote. We gave books, not bombs, bread, not bullets, smiles, not scars, toys, not tanks, peace, not terror, liberty, not poverty, hope, not despair, love, not hate, and life, not death. And for that, they were convicted of conspiracy with terrorism. And these glorious men will go to prison because of what they did. It tears the heart out of us, Catherine, to know this is going on and that our own country is doing this.
You know, it does. And I actually went to Texas to speak at a town hall meeting for the Holy Land Foundation. And that was before the first trial because these people were also tried. The government, the first trial ended in a mistrial. And the government then brought the case again to court. And what happened in that case, in Holy Land Foundation were sending aid to Palestine. And in the second trial, an Israeli agent was allowed to testify anonymously against these people. And I think that's a big reason why they were able to be convicted. But the problem with that is the Holy Land Foundation was sending aid only to the same organisations that were approved by the Israeli government. And our own, the state here was sending aid to these same people. And yet the Holy Land Foundation was convicted of terrorism when they were doing exactly what the State Department in this country was doing and sending money to approved people. And again, I would say to listeners, this is why it's so important to go to these trials, because when you read the write-ups in the newspapers, they're, you know, they're truncated. They don't explain the wider situation. And you had mentioned earlier about the communication management unit. You know, another really frightening thing about these cases is that many of them are being sent to this special prison unit in Indiana, and it's virtually only Muslims or Arabs who are in this unit. It was the old death row, and it was in such bad disrepair that they built a new death row. And I guess this place had been empty for a number of years, but they decided to move Muslims to this in December 2006. In a massive operation, they took Muslims out of their cells all around the country and then bused them to Terre Haute. And this special unit has severe restrictions on communications. There's no contact visit. And initially, for the first 6 months, people were allowed to worship together. And you know, that was a major improvement for these people, many of whom are devout Muslims. But increasingly, they've been restricted. They've been restricted in their ability to fast. And recent reports from the CNU, from inmates, say, you know, they're being served rotten food. I mean, not just old food, but rotten food that would make that makes the guards almost pass out, so that people aren't getting enough nutrition. And, you know, it's really interesting. I was reading Alan Dershowitz's book, The Best Defense, and I really highly recommend it. It's a look at our legal system, and it certainly confirms a lot of what, you know, my experience. But one of the things that he talks about in that book is his defense of Jewish prisoners in the Soviet Union. And it seems to me that what's happening to Muslims in this country and the kind of conditions they're being held in...
We have to break it.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm on with Catherine Hughes. We're talking about political prisoners, the special CMU unit at Terre Haute, Indiana. Catherine, during the break, or maybe just before it, you communicate regularly with Rafael, and I communicate regularly with two of the inmates at the CMU. And yes. I got an email from one. When the program is over, I'll answer him. I never know what I sent to him reaches him, or what he sends me reaches me. I did notice the email I got this morning. He sent it on Friday, and I just got it within the last 15, 20 minutes or so. So there is a delay, and of course everything is monitored. They can screen out anything they want. I know I've sent attachments in emails that were taken out. What kind of attachment I would send, Catherine? Maybe the prison people read what I send, but they've never let any of the prisoners there read it. Heaven forbid they learned anything about what really is going on. But I'll answer this man. It's a very disturbing situation. Can I back up just for a minute and
yeah.
just talk about the illegality, just very briefly,
oh.
of this? You've written about it, and I wrote about it. The Supreme Court in 2005, there was a decision involving segregation of California, Johnson v. California, and segregating prisoners for any reason whatsoever, race, religion, you name it, is illegal. The 14th Amendment prohibits it. And I just took a couple of lines out of the Supreme Court decision, and they said, well, again, the 14th Amendment protects against racial discrimination, whether in your own community or whether in a federal or state prison. And the court, quote, rejected the notion that separate can ever be equal or neutral. 50 years ago, in Brown v. Board of Education, famous case, then my words, this court reputed segregation, in the court's words, and refuses to resurrect it today. Well, the law never stands in the way of our government, whether under George Bush, under Barack Obama, under anybody else. They do what they want, the law notwithstanding. Prison regulations also discriminate, the same thing. Doesn't matter. They set up this unit anyway, completely illegal. And the idea is to treat Muslims more harshly than non-Muslims. They may throw a couple of non-Muslims in there to make it look like they're conforming to the law. But this very definitely is a unit for Muslims and Middle Eastern prisoners, Arabs. That's what they're talking about. So they put them in there. They're not terrorists. And they're generally not convicted of terrorism. The closest they can come, Catherine, might be a conspiracy to commit it. Not that they did anything, but the concocted notion that there was some conspiracy to commit terrorism. And it goes on. I could go through all the cases I've written about, and it's the same kind of stuff that's put together.
What you're saying is something that's been very, very disheartening to me, being involved in this case. You know, one belief after another has been shattered for me. You know, how Dr. Garcia was never held innocent until proven guilty. You know, the day of the arrest, Ashcroft announced that funders of terrorism had been, apprehended. And yet he was never allowed to face that charge. And they held him for 31 months without bail. They denied him access to his own records. The amendment about unreasonable searches and seizures. The government investigated Garcia for 5 years. 7 government agencies. They bugged his house. They intercepted his mail. They intercepted his telephone calls. They went through his trash. You know, so many of his, civil rights have been violated. And I thought, you know, people like the ACLU or the Centre for Constitutional Rights or, you know, it's really been stunning to me in 4 years of being involved in this case is, we have this Bill of Rights that says we have all these rights. But when, in actual fact, unless the people defend these rights and stand up for the rights of each other, then they can easily be violated. And that is why civil participation is so important. I mean, especially in these cases at the moment, but in other cases, And, you know, they do have an email at the CMU, and I think partly that's because it's a lot easier to monitor than letters. But, you know, the letters have going to the CMU are held up while they're read, and that's in and out. And people only have 15-minute phone call a week, which is, you know, minuscule compared to what they have in other prisons. They can only visit for two-hour visits a month, and that's non-contact. And just recently, they're putting microphones and video cameras in every inch of the unit. And, you know, I was lying in bed the other morning thinking, what would it be like if I knew that I was lying in bed and there was a video camera watching me? And it's like 1984.
Oh, indeed.
And as you said earlier in the programme, these things don't stop with the targeted group. You know, we saw that happen in Germany. You know, they start going after one group, and then the circle widens. And that's why, you know, if for nothing else than for ourselves, we have to defend the civil liberties of these people.
And there's so much about what has been done to them, Catherine, that we can talk about. And I know about a small number who I've written about, but I just extrapolate and say, my goodness, I mean, this just multiply this by many, many, many others. Plus what mm-hmm. goes on in what I call torture prisons. Guantanamo, and heaven knows how many torture prisons around the world, ones controlled by us directly, ones by proxy governments, where countless hundreds, maybe more than that, people are rounded up and put into these hell holes and absolutely savaged. Human beings just destroyed. I've written what we do to these people, and it's going on right now. It's going on right now in Guantanamo. I put out an article last week about it, where there is virtually no change. Obama said he would shut down Guantanamo, and conditions are at least as bad. He signed that the second day in office. Conditions right now, 2 months later, are at least as bad as they were under George Bush. And most of these people, there's a good possibility, Catherine, that every single one of them is absolutely innocent and never should have been there in the first place. And way back many months ago, I wrote about when the so-called war on terror was just getting kick-started, a bounty was put on people called, quote-unquote, Al-Qaeda, quote-unquote, Taliban. Al-Qaeda had a bigger bounty, especially in places like Afghanistan. So if you did not like your neighbor for any reason, you had an argument, he owes you money, he hasn't repaid you, or something like that, you turn him in, and you say, oh, he's Taliban, oh, he's Al-Qaeda, and you're paid a bounty. So many, many dozens of innocent men were rounded up this way because it was an easy way to make a buck, especially in a country deeply impoverished. So you don't like your neighbor? A goodbye neighbor, and hello bounty. Well, maybe go get another one. And we took these people to places like Guantanamo, where the torture was absolutely savage, and it continues now, and it will continue. There will not be any change in this policy. The order to eliminate torture is absolutely meaningless. Well, they're not torturing them in the CMU in Terre Haute, but they treat them absolutely wretchedly. One other point that I just wanted to mention earlier, Catherine, you talked about how the media covers it, especially on television, on especially high-profile cases, a Sami Al-Aryan, certainly local television might pick up something like the Holy Land Foundation charity. I don't know if the Fort Dix Five ended up on TV, but some of these cases end up on TV. We remember the headlines. And they literally concoct fictional stories. And the situation for these people is guilty until proven innocent. So the media hangs them, and then the kangaroo proceedings hang them.
Right.
And these people are convicted unjustly and put away for long sentences. In some cases, they could be 50, 60 years or even life. Completely
right.
innocent men. And once in a while, a woman. I had a program about Afia Siddiqui, a completely innocent woman who they literally destroyed as a human being. They turned her into mush because of the torture
yeah.
that they inflicted on her. And she's in, the last I heard, she's in a U.S. medical facility down in Texas. But,
right.
but she literally was turned into mush. She'll never be the same again if she walks out today.
Right. And, you know, I think that's the same with a lot of these people. And, you know, what I'm saying to people is, okay, I know, having sat through the trial, I've assessed Dr. Dacier's innocence, and certainly in other cases that I've been involved in. And, you know, is everybody in Guantanamo Bay innocent? I don't know. But let's give them due process. Let's give them a fair trial. That's one of the things that I'm asking for. How can we deny that? Give these people access to the legal system. Give them access to evidence. It's called exculpatory evidence. Evidence that the government has that will help them prove their innocence. And it is so important that we uphold the Geneva Conventions, that we uphold the human rights of every individual, you know, that we uphold international law. I mean, it's really very, very frightening to me, the kind of world that we're creating. It's very reminiscent of the early 30s in Germany and Europe. And, you know, unless people wake up and say, no, we have to have a process, due process, that allows these people to be innocent until they're proven guilty. And, you know, I just don't know how you stop what's happening in the media. Certainly having sat through the trial and seen what the local paper did to Dacier, I think papers and reporters should be held responsible. I don't know how you do that, but I do think it's something that we need to address. And just something I want to let listeners know about before the programme ends, Steve, is there's two lawyers in Albany who they have a client at the CMU who was set up in one of these sting cases. In fact, his lawyer said it's not even a sting, it was a frame-up. They have launched a project, and it's called Project Salaam. And they have a website, projectsalaam.org, and Salaam is S-A-L-A-M. And it's an investigative project. What they've done is they've taken all these cases from all over the country and prepared a database. And it's an initiative that seeks justice for wrongly prosecuted Muslims. And what they're saying is that, you know, some of these Muslims are completely innocent, or others have been severely overcharged, like Dacier, and or over-sentenced, like Dacier. I mean, he was given 22 years for sending aid to starving civilians in Iraq. And they've created a database, and the idea is, for example, there's one of the witnesses that I think he's been given the nickname Supergrass, because the government uses him over and over again in these cases to testify against the defendants. So what the database is going to do is you'll be able to look up this guy's name and then look at the different cases. And, you know, the government is also using bogus experts in a lot of these cases. So you'll be able to see what these experts testified it. And, you know, at the moment, many people feel that something like Project Salaam is going to be the best hope for many of these people achieving justice, because the actual justice system has been so corrupted in these cases that it's very, very difficult to get justice. For example, in Dafir's case, even though the government said he was a terrorist before the trial, tried him as a white-collar criminal, didn't allow him to address that charge in court, and then said he was a terrorist and sentenced him as a terrorist afterwards, his appeal to the Second Circuit Court is only based on the trial records and everything to do with the case. So he can't even appeal the fact that the government wrote a paper in 2003 that already said he was guilty. And it's been hard to watch, and that's why I have to speak out.
Catherine, it breaks our hearts. Oh my goodness, this hour has flown by. We have one short segment left.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back with Catherine Hughes. Catherine, we just have a few minutes left. I want you to know, with information you helped me get, I'll put out a short article midweek on the deteriorating conditions at the CMU. It's pretty unpleasant to begin with under normal conditions, but things have gotten worse in recent weeks and months. And whether it's bad food or medical care that either is delayed, or heaven only knows, they can even deny it. All kinds of things to make life as harsh as possible for the men who were interned there, and everything monitored, video cameras, the entire place are wired for sound. There's simply nothing you can do anytime, 24 hours a day, or get away from this. It's always there on top of you, right there with you. And
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Steve, because that's one of the things that Dr. Dafir says works in their favour, because the video cameras are videoing all this bad food and abuse, and he's actually put in a request to make sure that these videos are not destroyed so that the evidence is there. So that's the upside of it, but I mean, the downside of it is just that feeling of 1984.
Catherine? I guess they could destroy anything they want.
Right.
That's the problem. I mean, they literally have everything. All of their abuses are on tape, everything. The sound, the video, everything. But, you know, they can simply go through it and delete anything they want to delete.
Yep, they can, but certainly Dr. Dafir has tried to stop them doing that, so that if you know, he wants, if the people want to have it investigated, then the evidence would be there for the investigation. But, you know, I think even though, you know, sometimes it feels like Voices in the Wilderness, you know, the group who were speaking out against the sanctions in Iraq, you know, what a brilliant name that was, because that's what it's like. But even though we are Voices in the Wilderness, we need to keep speaking out, even though it seems like we're not having any effect. It is important for us to witness what is happening and to write articles like you and like I have. And I'm actually just starting a documentary. I'm starting work on a documentary called Crime of Compassion about Dr. Duffier's case. And that will be introduced and narrated by Dennis Halliday, who resigned from the UN because of the sanctions. You mentioned him at the beginning of the programme. I mean, he's just appalled at what has happened to Dr. Duffier by sending aid to Iraq during a humanitarian catastrophe that killed 1.5 million people. He is now spending 22 years in a special prison unit for Muslims, or in any prison unit, but particularly...
Catherine, it's shocking. That music means they will break away to the next program. So about all I have time left is to thank you for coming on. I hope you'll come back as we get more information and we can update more for listeners. I will not get off this story. This is just too important. I've read about what we've talked about briefly, what goes on in other countries. It's happening right here. It's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
Catherine, we will continue the story.
And thanks to your listeners.
My great thanks to you, and I welcome everybody back tomorrow. We will have another discussion. We'll switch topics, another big one, and we'll be back on this topic again later in the week, twice this week.